I like to look at foods as high nutritional foods and low nutritional foods. High nutritional foods are foods that more probably come out of the ground and they've less have less human intervention in them. And more processed foods or low nutritious foods would probably be more processed and have more human intervention in them. So, you know, that's use a bit of common sense. The more something looks like it came from the ground or from its natural state, probably the better that it is. But when you eat it, whether it be a soft drink or fruit or a vegetable or a slice of bread or pasta, the body will take it in, or take all the good stuff or not the good stuff, if there's no any good stuff in it, and it'll absorb it into the bloodstream. Now, obviously, the fiber will stay in your digestive system and help with regularity and decrease constipation and reduce bowel and colon cancer and all that wonderful stuff. But if you absorb it into the bloodstream, you take in, if there's good stuff in it, you take the vitamins and the minerals and the antioxidants and the phytochemicals, which is really good to promote good cellular health in the body, which is great stuff. So you take all that stuff in, but you also will take the macronutrients in, which is the carbohydrate, the protein, and the fat. If it's a sugary drink, we'll just take the carbohydrate because there's no protein or fat in it. If you eat meat, you'll take the protein and the fat without any carbohydrate because there's no carbohydrate in meats. If you eat fruits, you'll take the high carbohydrate, but there'll be no protein or fats because there's no protein or fats in fruits. So it takes it all in, including the macronutrients. Now, from a carbohydrate point of view, when the body breaks it down in the bloodstream, it will break that carbohydrate down into glucose. So in the bloodstream, it gets broken down to glucose. Now, glucose, there's no real difference between glucose from a soft drink or glucose from a slice of bread or glucose from a piece of fruit or glucose from a vegetable. It's just glucose. There's not a apple glucose and a vegetable glucose and a bread glucose and a Coke glucose and a Fanta glucose. You know, there's just glucose. So obviously there's more glucose in a can of Coke than there is in a handful of green beans or as there is in an apple. So you're basically getting glucose, but obviously you're getting more from the more maybe refined or processed foods, particularly if they're in liquid form. So in the bloodstream, they're called glucose. Understanding there's not a bread glucose and a pea glucose and a carrot glucose and a Coke glucose. There's just glucose, but they all come from those original sources anyway. So the bread glucose is no more fattening than a pasta glucose, is no more fattening than the Coke glucose, is no more fattening than a carrot glucose. You just got to eat a damn lot of carrots to get the same amount of glucose than you get from a can of Coke. Which means you're never going to eat that many carrots. I feed my donkey carrots every morning. I munch on a carrot, and they're bloody filling. After one carrot, I can't have any more carrots. But in a carrot, I haven't had many calories. There's lots of fiber and lots of good stuff in there, beta carotene and vitamin A and all that stuff. But I can put down a can of Coke or a bottle of Coke really easy because it's liquid and it's easy, so I can get a lot of calories. Or I can eat a lot of bread very quickly, more so than eat a carrot. So I guess certain foods are easier to eat faster and absorb faster because they're easier, whether it be liquid or they had less fiber or they're more processed. But unfortunately, people tend to think that this carbohydrate in that, where really it's just the way it's being processed or refined that gives you the ability to take more of it into your body, which means adds more calories. It adds more calories. So when the glucose is in the blood, one thing about glucose, it's quite a large molecule. So the body doesn't like a lot of large glucose molecules floating around the bloodstream. It's like having a little suburban street with a lot of semi-trailers driving up and down your street. You know, it's going to cause a fair bit of damage because they're very large and they cause a fair bit of damage on the road and the gutters. And as the glucose molecule, if you have high blood sugars or high blood glucose levels, as it floats around the bloodstream, it caused a lot of deterioration on the inner lining of the blood vessels. So the body doesn't like that. So its first response is try to burn it off if it can, if you use it as a source of energy, or try to store it, put it in the cells of the body and store it. And when it's stored as glycogen. So its first role is to burn it off if it can, if there's excess. Its second step is to try to store it, put it away. And now we know the body has the ability to store around about 400 grams of glycogen. Now, we can only store 400 grams for a number of reasons. Number one is if we could store as many molecules of glycogen as we could of fat, would be the size of an elephant, meaning the fat molecules are smaller than the glycogen molecules. So we can't store that many because it would just be too hard to store that amount of size. And the other thing is, we have the ability of 400 grams, which is around about 2,000 calories, say, which means that gives us enough energy to go and hunt and gather to top up if we need to. So there's enough energy as they'll go back to hunt and gather days. We don't need that amount of storage because, if we're hunting and gathering, that gives us enough time and energy to source food to top it up. So the body's quite an amazing machine when you look at it from a survival point of view. So the body tries to store it. Now, in the past, I guess I'll look at history, and even in my history, I'm not talking back in BC times, I'm talking back in Cayman times. When I was brought up in New Guinea and I came to Australia, there wasn't a big challenge of obesity. And I guess maybe the reasoning behind that is because we were far more active in incidental activity. We didn't have remote control TVs. We didn't have remote control garage doors. We didn't have push button windows in our car. We didn't have escalators. We didn't even have lifts. We didn't have horizontal escalators. We didn't have home services where people would come and mow your lawn, vacuum your pool, clean your house. None of that existed. So everything we had to do ourselves manually. Now, that in itself just created an active life. The TV was, you had to get up and turn the channel yourself between the four channels. There was only four channels. Life was just far more active. So number one, we're just far more active. And, we know from some of the research coming through that technology is saving us. I remember back in the 90s, some great research shows it was saving us around 800 calories a day, just technology, and it's probably greater now than it was back then. So technology is just saving us calories. So therefore, the old saying goes, you don't have to eat much if you don't do much to put on weight. But back in the days, life forced us to do a lot of stuff. We had to walk down to the corner store. We had to even drive down to the KFC to pick up the KFC. There was no home delivery. It didn't exist. So we're just more active. The other thing is that we just seem to eat. There weren't as much fast food around. There weren't as much Coke. No one stored Coke in their fridge. That was just a treat drink you'd have occasionally when you go out to buy a Coke. No one actually bought Coke from the supermarket and took it home. It just wasn't a thing. So we just tend to eat more holistic foods, which were, still have full of carbohydrates. We still ate bread with lots of butter on it, and we still ate lots of fruits. But we put lots of butter on our vegetables. We weren't paranoid about low fat. That didn't exist. We weren't looking at low fat, that's saturated fat, that's bad food. We just ate food. And because we just ate holistic foods and we didn't have the old fast food and the processed soft drinks, we just didn't tend to eat anywhere near as much. Plus, we were far more active. So we were eating carbohydrate. But carbohydrate wasn't making us fat. Our meals, our food was still mostly carbohydrate, but it wasn't making us fat because we just burnt it off and we just ate according to our activity levels. And so, look, I'm not saying that we can go back to those times because we can't, but if carbohydrate was the main culprit, then we would have been fat back then because we used to eat a damn lot of bread and we used to eat the white, fluffy white bread. That was the favourite. Then we'd smother it with big layers of butter, and that was our favourite food, but we just burnt it off. So if we transition into from a scientific point of view, we will all our carbohydrate stores, that 400 grams was always being depleted. It was like a bucket with holes in it. If you put carbohydrate in it in the form of fluid, it was always leaking out. You're always burning off carbohydrates. So your bucket of carbohydrate, your 400 grams, was never overflowing because you were active, and B, the concentration of carbohydrate you put in it came more in the form of vegetables and breads and cereals and pastas. But even pasta, you wouldn't have that every night. You'd have that in a special once a week, in Italian pasta. But even historically, through the Mediterranean diet, they have pasta every day, but they don't eat the quantities of pasta that we do in the Western world. It's funny, when you go and visit a traditional village in Italy, or even in France, they have lots of breads and pasta, but they don't eat in the massive amounts that we eat today. Pasta now comes out in a wheelbarrow if you order a meal. If you go to Italy, in a traditional town in Italy, the pasta will come out in a small bowl. The croissants in France are small. The croissants in the Western world are like boomerangs. So they eat high fat, high carb, but the quantities are small in the traditional sense. But in this day and age of abundance, we're eating massive amounts of large serving sizes. So we're blaming the macronutrients, but really it's not the macronutrients. It's just the sheer volume of macronutrients that we have. If you travel the world and you go to the traditional cities in Asia, they live on rice. But now people say rice is really bad for us, really fattening. Wait a minute. Well, a billion people in China have been eating rice all their life, but they're active. They have small bowls of rice, and they have vegetables and meats in there. And it's not the rice making them fat. In this, you come over to Australia or the UK or America, and you order, you know, a teriyaki chicken, it will come out in this massive bowl of rice with the teriyaki chicken. If you go to traditional China and ask for a teriyaki chicken, it will come in a small bowl of rice with a little bit of chicken in it. So it's not the rice, it's the volume of rice is the challenge. It's not the bread, it's the volume of bread that people are having. It's not the pasta, it's the volume of pasta people are having. So stop blaming the pasta and just start to adapt the volume. Because there's nothing wrong with the pasta, there's nothing wrong with the bread, there's nothing wrong with the rice. Because if you go back through the thousands of years of history, we've always had it. We never had an obesity challenge. The challenge is the volume that we're having is far exceeds the amount of volume of activity that we're doing on a day-to-day basis. And we're looking from a sociological and environmental point of view now. So if you look at, again, now, what happens when our carbohydrate stores are full, when those 400 grams are full? Now, historically, it was pretty hard to fill them up because we were always active and our serving size wasn't the extreme that it is today. I'll use a little example that Ro and I had a giggle about. You know, people have breakfast even if they're not hungry because it's just the thing to do. You know, we were at Rotorua. We're walking along and this little kid says to his mum, and it's around about 1 o'clock in the afternoon. We're standing at the lights waiting for the little walk sign to go. And the little kid says to mum, and he's a little chubby kid, right? And mum's a bit chubby herself. And the little kid says to mum and says, let's have lunch. And mum says, we've already had lunch. And he says, let's have another lunch. And she says, okay. And off they go. They go and have a second lunch. Now, in that lunch, they might have a bit of bread or pasta or rice. And are they fat because, oh, that damn bread, they shouldn't have had bread in their second lunch? Well, maybe it's the second lunch is the challenge. Or maybe it's the serving of the first lunch. Or maybe it's a combination of the serving of the first lunch compared to how inactive they've been all morning before they have their first lunch, not to mention their second lunch. So it's very easy to point a finger at a macronutrient, but that macronutrient has been on this planet well before you came on it, and it didn't contribute to the obesity challenge as it is today. So maybe it's not the macronutrient, maybe it's the amount of food that macronutrient is. And if it's the amount of food, maybe it's what's on the bread, such as the butter or what you're dipping the bread into, could be the challenge. People say, oh, you can't have donuts because donuts are full of carbs, it's really bad. Well, is it the flour in the donuts the challenge? Or is it you dipping that flour into oil, boiling oil to be able to virtually fry the donut to create the donut? Is it the fat in the donut, the carbohydrate in donut? Or maybe it's just that you're having too many donuts, whether your donuts are too big, or is the topping in the donut? But, you know, a lot of people will blame the carb in the donut or the sugar on top of the donut that's making me fat. Really? Or the pasta, or maybe it's the creamy sauce that you're putting over the top of it, or the volume of pasta with the creamy sauce, plus the bread that you're dipping into it with the butter on it. You know, people are very so focused on one blame, they're not seeing the bigger picture of things. So what happens when your carbohydrates are full? Well, when your carbohydrates are full, which used to be, as I said, hard to fill up in, historically, if you go back to the history of time, but this day and age, due to such a sedentary lifestyle and the abundance in the food and the availability of food and the processing processes of food and how easy it is to wash that all down and eat that, then it's very easy now to top up your glycogen stores where they're overflowing. So what happens now? So when your glycogen stores are full, now you have high blood sugar levels. And this is the challenge that we have now with diabetes or type 2 diabetes, or is also linked to diabetes, because now when you're overweight, and you have high blood sugar levels, your sensitivity of your insulin seems to decrease. That leaves you with high levels of blood sugars or glucose in the body that cause a lot of deterioration on the inner lining of the arteries, not to mention the cells of the body, of the organs, as well as the muscle tissue. So if your glycogen stores are overflowing, then the body will try to do a couple of things. What we'll try to do is, first of all, it doesn't like having high blood sugar levels, so it tries to oxidize it off. What it tries to do is to burn it off. So what it tries to do is to increase your metabolism. That process is called thermogenesis. It means it increases the revs of the engine to burn off those extra fuel. So the body is quite capable of doing that and has been through the history of time to burn off that little bit of excess that you have once in a while. And you may know sometimes if you go out for dinner, I eat the massive bag of lollies, which I normally wouldn't eat. I would whack that down with a can of Coke. I'd go home that night. I go to bed, 3 o'clock in the morning. I wake up in the morning and I'm sweaty and I'm hot. My shirt, my pajamas are drenched. And I think, good, what happened there? Well, what's happened there is that you've gone to bed. You have all these extra calories or glycogen, glucose floating around your bloodstream. The body wants to get rid of it. It increases your metabolism. When it increases metabolism, then it starts to burn off the glycogen. When your body starts to oxidize glycogen, as you know, when you start to produce energy, one of the byproducts of production of energy is the production of heat. So it increases your body temperature, and your body temperature goes up. Your body tries to cool itself off by sweating, and you start to sweat. And then you wake up in the morning all hot and bothered with a sweaty shirt. And I still do that today because sometimes I eat too much. Knowing I eat too much, but I wake up with a smelly T-shirt because I've been sweating all night trying to get rid of the extra calories in the form of glucose. So the body will try to oxidize it off. Now, in the past, it's been able to do that because we never overate that much and we didn't overate that often for it to be a health challenge. But this day and age, it's so easy to overeat and undermove and have that constant excess of glucose. But understanding, if you're overeating, you're also overeating not just in the glucose or the carbohydrate, but you can guarantee you're overeating in the fat and you're also overeating in the protein. So a lot of times if people are overeating, they're not just overeating carbohydrate, because people don't just go and eat snakes alive all day long. They eat bread, which is carbohydrate, fat, protein. They eat too much pasta with all the sauces and the topping on it, which is carbohydrate, protein, and carbohydrate. They eat too much of everything. But when they look at everything, they're eating too much of everything, which means they have too much carbohydrate, agreed, but they're also having too much fat. It's very unlikely they're having too much carbohydrate and they're still only having 30 grams of fat a day. That is would be very, very odd situation for that to happen. If they're having far too much carbohydrate, I guarantee their grams of fat they're having every day is well over 100. If you want to be losing fat, you're probably looking at getting it down to 30 to 40 grams of fat. So if they eat overeating carbohydrate, they're overeating food, which means they're overeating in all the macronutrients. Now, we know one thing is that when you eat fat, it goes into the bloodstream and it has a direct line of destination to the fat cell. because the body doesn't necessarily try to burn off excess fat. It just stores it. And it's very efficient at storing fat. So when you eat fat, and it has unlimited ability to store it. We have over 50 billion fat cells in their body, and they are expandable. So we can keep storing fat until the cows come in. But we can only store 400 grams of carbohydrate. So if you're eating too much carbohydrate, you're eating too much fat, which means all that fat is going to the fat cell. And if you're eating too much carbohydrate, then the body is constantly trying to burn off the carbohydrate to get your blood glucose levels down to protect its blood vessels from the deterioration of those glucose cells or molecules floating around the bloodstream. So if you're high in glucose, then what the body would do is try to burn off the glucose, and it will store the fat because it's got somewhere to put the fat. But it hasn't got anywhere to put the glucose anymore because it's floating around the bloodstream. So if you're high in carbohydrate, the body is storing the fat. It becomes more efficient at storing the fat. So many times, it's not necessarily the carbohydrate that's turning the fat. It's just eating too much carbohydrate increases your body's ability to store the fat that you're eating with the carbohydrate in the food that you're eating it with. But also remember, every gram of fat has 9 calories, where every gram of carbohydrate still only has 4.5 calories. So fat still has twice the capacity and twice the calorie content than carbohydrate. So it's far easier to get to take too many calories on fat than it is in carbohydrate. And it's far easier to store fat than it is the carbohydrate, because you can only store 400 grams. Now, if your body's in that state, where it's in the constant process of trying to burn off the glucose, and it will be also in the process of storing the fat that you eat with it, then it will start to try to get rid of that glucose because it can't store it. You've got too much there to oxidize it off. So now what the body does is it will start to convert it into fat. And that process is called de novo lipogenesis. Now, de novo lipogenesis tends to occur when you regularly and consistently and habitually eat 50% of your recommended daily intake of calories. So if your recommended daily intake of calories is, say, 2,000 calories, and you regularly eat 3,000 calories, which in this day and age is very easy to do, particularly if you don't move very much, then you have that excess of 1,000 calories, which is 50% of your daily recommended intake. So you're consciously in that surplus, not just a little surplus. If it's a little surplus, the body can adapt by increasing metabolism and burning that little surplus off. But we've got a 50%+ surplus, and some people will be eating not 50% of their RDI, but they'll be eating 100, 200, 300, 400% of the RDI. They sit down, they do nothing, and they eat 4,000 calories a day, which is what an elite endurance athlete would do, but the only endurance they're doing is the endurance of the soapies throughout the day watching TV. And then they keep putting on weight, and then people say, well, you shouldn't be eating that carbohydrate. Well, there's a few more things at play than just the carbohydrate. There's lots of things at play which make a far more significant effect. So when you're in that state, then the process of de novo lipogenesis will occur. So basically, the carbohydrate molecule, which is made up of carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, CHO. So what will happen is the body will break that down in the liver, will break it down, and then rebuild it and to form a fat molecule, which is a chain of carbon molecules with hydrogen molecules attached to that. So if you have the molecular structure of fat is carbon, hydrogen. If you look at the molecular structure of carbohydrates, carbon, hydrogen, oxygen. So they're the same building blocks, but they're built in a different molecular structure. So what the body does is break the carbohydrate molecule apart and rebuilds it as a fat molecule so it can store it, because it can't store it as a carbohydrate in the form of a glycogen, and it can't oxidize it because you're just putting too much in. But that process in de novo lipogenesis takes a bit of time. It uses energy. So generally speaking, you will lose 25% of the calories and the carbohydrate in the process to converting into fat. So if the body, for simplicity, takes 100 calories of carbohydrate and stores it as fat, it will only store 75 calories of fat. The other 25% will be used in the process of energy in that transformation process, because it requires energy. And the same with protein. You know, protein is made of carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, and nitrogen. So when you convert protein into fat, which it can do, it's a complex process. And only does that if you have excess protein, which is easy to have these days. Everyone thinks we're lacking in protein. Far from it. Most people are eating too much food, so they're certainly not lacking in protein. They're just having too much protein, fat, and carbohydrate. So the body will convert carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, and nitrogen, which is the makeup molecular structure of protein, and we build it into a fat molecule, which is a chain of carbon molecules with hydrogen molecules attached to it. But again, that process is a complicated biochemical process. And in the process, you lose 25% of the calories in the protein, from the protein. But if you store fat from when you eat it to the fat cell, you only lose 2%, because the body is very efficient at storing fat. Where if you convert carbohydrate into fat or protein into fat, you lose 25%. So yes, you can store protein and carbohydrate as fat, but it only occurs when you're in that surplus or abundance of protein or carbohydrate on a daily basis, which in this day and age we seem to be the case. If you go back to the 60s and the 70s and even the 80s, that wasn't the case. This started happening more in the 80s, where it was more acceptable to live off fast food, and technology started to kick in with the computer age and the technological age, because we went through obviously the hunter and gatherer to the hunter-gatherer age, into the agricultural age and the industrial age, which are all physical ages. Now we're into the technological age, which is very not physical, which means, you know, we don't have to eat anywhere near as much as we used to back in the 60s and 70s to get fat. But in the 60s and 70s, it was just hard to eat that much food to get fat. So, yes, carbohydrate can turn to fat. Yes, protein can turn to fat. But if you're having too much protein and too much carbohydrate, I guarantee you're having too much fat, which is probably the main contributing factor, but you're still blaming the fat. But the fat, you're still blaming the carbohydrate. But the carbohydrate will actually aid in the storing of the fat from the food into the fat, into the fat cell. So what is the overall answer to this? Well, my suggestion, for what it's worth, and it's only my opinion, is stop focusing on the macros, and stop focusing on blaming a certain macro, and start focusing on just eating holistic nutritional food, which will serve your body in the right proportion with the right macros and the right percentages, with the right micronutrients, with the right vitamins and minerals, with the right phytochemicals and antioxidants, because it comes naturally, and just adapt the serving size according to your activity level. So if you move more, eat more. If you move less, eat less. Rather than focusing on a macro or focusing on a certain food and pointing fingers, just enjoy the food you enjoy. And most of the foods, which are the foods, everyday foods, should be your foods that come out of the ground, which are your fruits and your vegetables and your maybe a little bit less processed grains. And then you supplement them, obviously, with your meats. If you're vegetarian, that's okay. Then work out another way to get those through beans and so on. And then you have your sometimes foods, which is the occasional takeout and the occasional coat and the occasional alcoholic drink, whatever it might be. And if you put it, 80% of your diet is from the good stuff or the high nutritional foods, and 20% is more from less nutritional, but you know, you enjoy it and it's tasty and you enjoy it, and then you just modify the volume of food according to your activity levels. You know, if you want to lose weight, eat the volume of food to according to the weight you want to be. You know, so don't eat to serve your body now. Eat your to serve your body to the weight you want to be. One of my favorite athletes is a guy called Sugar Ray Leonard, who's one of the legendary boxers. And he said he's regularly asked, because he's always in shape, Sugar Ray Leonard. He's always in fantastic. He fought in welterweight, and he actually won the world championship in 6 different weight divisions. But he always looks exactly the same, just a bigger version of himself, ripped to shreds, lean as. from welterweight through the light heavyweight. It's quite amazing. And people ask, how do you, what's your nutritional approach? And even though he's retired now and he's in his 50s, he's still in great shape. He says, you know, I don't change anything. I always eat exactly the same. He says, my favourite food is my mum's southern fried chicken. And when I go into training camp for a world title, I keep eating my southern fried chicken. I just eat less of it. And out of season, I eat a bit more of it. So just adapt the volume of food or the quantity size of food and eat the food that you really enjoy. Make sure that 2/3 or 80% of it looks healthy, looks high nutritional stuff, and you'll just be fine. But when you start pointing fingers at certain macros, and understand, if you're going to be in this profession for another 30 years, guarantee there'll be new things to point at. You know, in the 90s it was fat grams, and in the 70s they were blaming salt. And there's going to be something new and now, so you should have high protein. And I don't think the solution is about a macro. I think it's just eating highly nutritious food that looks like it came out of the ground, and modifying the amounts. You just have to be more conscious of it now, because the environment doesn't take care of it. It means our daily life, our active life of working, doesn't take care of it. We have to be more aware of it, because we're surrounded by labour-saving devices. We also have opportunities shoved in front of us on a more regular basis in the form of takeaway foods and soft drinks and easy grabs to add calories, and that can be tempting. So there's a good start of an overall of carbohydrate. Is it a part of the challenge? Of course it is. But it's not the main culprit. It's just one of the many moving parts that are contributing to the obesity challenge. And I think if you take a holistic approach to it, people aren't going to become so fixated and start to create paranoia eating disorders related to certain macros or particularly foods that they probably really, really, really enjoy. But you're actually taking the joy out of their food. And if you take the joy out of the food, you take the joy out of a large chunk of their life.